So today we're joined by Andrew Hemming, Managing Director of Centuria Healthcare. Andrew leads a team of 15 healthcare property specialists. Andrew has over two decades experience working across investment markets in both Australia, the US and Europe, including fixed term interests, equity derivatives and the commercial property sector. Andrew, thank you for your time and joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. We'll jump into the first question. And that is being, what are the key factors Centuria Healthcare look for when assessing the viability of a healthcare investment? And there's probably a few parts to the answer that no doubt you'll touch on, but from an improvement perspective, an operational perspective and locational perspective.
Yeah, good question, Marcello. I think to really understand it, I just briefly take a step back and give everyone the context of where the health industry's come from. So over the decades, we've got a two-tiered system, the public system, the private system. Traditionally, we've built really big hospitals because the length of stay of patients has been really long, on average about 14 days. Today, fast forward to what we're doing today in terms of development and the well sought after hospitals, it's really about efficiency. And that goes across the health chain. It's not just hospitals, that includes GP primary care as well as aged care. So, you know, from a tenant perspective, it's about, for a hospital, for example, more theatres, less beds. For a really integrated health building, it's a specialist combined with a GP, combined with, you know, radiology and other specialists and some retail. So it's really about referral benefits and referral pathways. It's a smaller floor plate. It's about efficiency. And it's also about location in the right type of demographics. Demographics isn't just always about affluence and affordability. It's also about matching that type of health need to the demand. For example, you know, we look at locations that are actually low economic demographics, but they're a high need in terms of diabetes, right? And that would service a particular type of GP primary care operator. And in providing further context on hospital stays, and coming back to the number that I provided earlier, 14 days, what we've seen over the last 10 years is the resurgence of day hospitals. Clearly, that's not overnight stay, it's a day procedure. But what we're looking at now is a market that's in between long stay and day, and it's funnily enough called short stay, which means the hospital provider can provide overnight accommodation, but they now have the ability to send patients home more quickly, so after 1 to 3 days, which obviously makes the operations and makes the hospital way more efficient, and it has a better outcome for the patient.
So, Andrew, you've obviously been in the press fairly consistently over the past few years, but what does Centuria's current portfolio look like from a tenant profile perspective, and what are some of the notable recent acquisitions or forthcoming developments you can touch on?
Yeah, Marcello, at the end of December last year, Centuria Healthcare has 52 assets under management worth about $1 billion. They're held within separate funds. We've specifically got three development funds. We've got one wholesale open-ended fund, five closed unlisted funds, and the wholesale fund also has two mandates with AXA Grosvenor for $500 million, as well as Calvary, which is a development down in Melbourne, Victoria. Additionally, we've recently opened one open-ended unlisted retail fund called the Centuria Healthcare Property Fund. More recently, we have been building that fund to have a collection of 10 properties worth around $220 million. With the fund while a little over 6 years and 100% occupancy. And the portfolio composition is roughly a mixture of day hospitals, short stay hospitals and medical centres all around the country, which is a mixture of metro markets and regional markets. Probably recently people have seen in the press one of the more notable acquisitions and developments that we are undertaking at the moment, which is a $64 million short-stay hospital in Kew, Melbourne. Kew is quite an affluent suburb. We're undertaking that development with a tenant that is a collection of 42 specialist doctors, as well as Medibank Private Limited, to undertake a short-stay hospital model, where specifically that will be five theatres, a infusion clinic as well as a radiology business on the ground floor. And the reason that's quite exciting is not just because, you know, we have a different ownership model where the specialist doctors, the 42 doctors, will own part of the holding company that is the lessee of this development. But interestingly, if you're a patient, most importantly, and you go to this hospital, then there is a high degree of probability that you won't have to pay a gap. All right. What that means is if I wanted a hip surgery, for example, I'm literally just paying my premium each year. I'm not paying any out of pocket, which can go between $1,000 to $5,000 if I was to go to another hospital in a nearby location. So from an affordability, from a experience and a health outcome point of view, we think this is the best model.
And Andrew, more broadly, why are investors and institutional groups gravitating so strongly toward healthcare? In your opinion, obviously it's something that has been gaining a lot of, or a sector that's been gaining a lot of traction, particularly over the past 2 to 3 years.
So Marcello, it's a good question. And I think a lot of people have seen the fruits of the labor in the US, where the healthcare real estate sector is the second largest sector in the country. In Australia, we've just seen the emergence of this sector and it's still in its infancy. Over the last 6 or 7 years since we've been involved, we've seen the amount of investment rise from as little as $2 billion to now around $15 billion. And certainly the growth rate is increasing dramatically. There are probably three reasons for this. People have noticed the rising tide of the aging demographic in Australia, but also what comes with that is the rising cost. People who do have private health insurance can see their insurance premium rise at around 7% a year, yet their wage increase at less than 2% a year. So how healthcare grows and grows through the efficiency of property is a really interesting equation that people have looked at over the last few years. What pops out of that equation is some of the things that I've talked about before. What that means is you've got a number of stakeholders, whether they be insurers, hospital operators, surgeons, and patients all actually wanting the same thing. They want a lower cost and better healthcare environment, which means we have to develop these types of properties, whether they be a primary care property, a hospital, or accommodation for aged and disabled. And so because of that, we only have a handful of really efficient, the right type of healthcare properties in Australia. Additionally, when you look at healthcare real estate and you look at other sectors such as retail, office and industrial, retail was the market darling for many years for institutional managers to rely on because of COVID and because of the resurgence of online retail. There's been some disruption in that space. I think the one thing that people can rely on with when it comes to healthcare, particularly after and during and after a pandemic, is the demand will not fall from patients and will in fact increase as we have a rising population. So when it comes to new developments, new buildings, increasing demand, the right combination of referral partners and benefits in terms of multiple tenants in one building or adjacent across the road or on the same site, it becomes an investment that's on a risk-adjusted return, very, very attractive. The tenants are sticky based not just by long-term leases, but the high specialisation, the amount of capex that goes into the fit-out, and the reason that they are there is because their demographic and their demand base is there to support that business. So we think this is a sector that will only increase in securitisation, and we're just at the beginning. And if we delve a little deeper into the comparison of retail and office and then looking at healthcare real estate, there are two real distinctions. During and over the pandemic and since then, you know, our investors across our portfolio have enjoyed 100% occupancy and zero rental arrears. It was a robust investment tested when the pandemic was at its peak, and these businesses have come back stronger than they were pre-pandemic, and their earnings is stronger than they forecasted, and the ability for them to pay rent is very sound. But additionally, as I touched on earlier, it's the amount of capex that goes into these specialised properties. When we're, again, comparing to retail and office, even industrial, you know, a cold shell or a shell of a building is built and the fit out is tailored to that business's use, but it's nowhere near as costly as it is for a hospital. And the second reason is fit for purpose. When we're looking at a comparison of office, retail, industrial and healthcare, the specialisation for healthcare sits head and shoulders above the other three sectors that I've mentioned. Specifically, there are two examples. One is the increase in regulations across things like sterilisation. You know, sterilisation is important for obvious reasons in a surgical hospital, but the equipment and the size of the sterilisation rooms has increased. And again, on the theatres, a surgical theatre over the last decade or so has been built to a specification of around 28 or 30 square metres. In today's environment, a lot of hospitals are looking for 50 square metres or more. The focus today is on theatres, not so much on beds. And additionally, when we are developing radiation oncology bunkers, we're looking at 1.6 to 3 metre concrete walls to house the radiation. And one can imagine how expensive that is. So when you add those examples together, it'll give you a sense of how sticky and how long term the tenant will remain in that building, often not just on the first generation of the lease, but the second generation as well. And I think investors overall are attracted to potentially lower returns, but longer and stronger returns over the period of time. And in today's environment, when investors are looking at income as opposed to capital growth, they're looking at income and capital protection, healthcare real estate stands head and shoulders above the rest.
And Andrew, just to finish off the million-dollar question, I suppose, is where do you see returns heading in the next 12 months? Are lower returns, as we've been seeing, expected to become the new norm for investors or for your fund?
It highlights one of our points of difference, which is we are tenant or operator-led. So in being operator-led, it lends us to two things. One, doing off-market deals, and two, doing development deals on a risk-adjusted basis. And the development deals will be operator-led, which account for roughly 30 to 50% of the net lettable area. So when we're looking at returns, we're looking at a margin on cost. However, when buying existing stock, whether it be a medical centre or hospital or aged care, we've seen cap rates compress over the years materially, particularly in the last 12 months. When we first came into the sector, I think our first acquisition was at a 9.5% cap rate back in 2014. And a recent acquisition that we have completed over the last few weeks was at 4.75%. But again, as there are an increasing number of investors looking at the space, and there's an increasing number of opportunities through a sale and leaseback campaign or through operator-led developments, we're seeing capitalisation rates in the low fours. But the only thing that we would ask people to really focus on is the quality of not just the covenant, but the type of use in that area. Because healthcare is very specific. There's areas of healthcare which are growing into prominence, and there's areas that will probably move out of a hospital into a home. So it's really important to understand the differences between those two, because it'll go to the strength of the lease and then obviously the strength of the overall investment performance.
Well, a big thank you to Andrew Hemming once again for taking the time out to join us for episode 2 of the podcast. And a final reminder in relation to the team's seminar, The Emergence of Social Infrastructure, taking place at the State Library in Victoria. Numbers are limited and we're very close to capacity. So for those with an interest in attending, we do recommend registration as a priority in the coming days. If anyone requires further information on today's podcast or the seminar in general or registration link, feel free to contact a member of the team at any time.